EMSradio.com.
EMS information for the next generation.
The EMS Garage is a production of EMSradio.com. You can find us on Facebook, just search EMS Garage. You can find us on Twitter at EMS Garage. Email us, emsgarage@gmail.com, or call us, 303-720-6001.
This episode of the EMS Garage is brought to you by Audible.com. Over 85,000 titles to choose from in every genre: thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and more. Get a free audiobook download for your MP3 or iPod. Just go to www.audibletrial.com/EMS Garage.
The EMS Garage.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the EMS Garage. I'm Chris Montero, your host. And why don't you grab a beer, pull on up, and listen to the garage. However, I've heard there is a little bit of urban legend out there that apparently every time that Greg Freeze says "very cool" on his podcast, you can take a drink. So on our podcast, we really don't have anything. So maybe every time I mess up a last name, you could, you know, take a drink, which is pretty much every week. But you can only take one drink. So grab a beer, join us. Or if you're driving, don't grab a beer, because that would be really bad. And that's bad advice. So please don't listen to me. I'm your host, Chris Montero. I'm the geeky medic on all the websites. Tonight, we are talking about the National Collegiate EMS Foundation. And I'm really excited to have a couple of guests on that are involved in that. And I also have guests on that have been previously involved in EMS on college campuses around the country. And if you're near a college campus or your EMS services, or it's affected by one, which I would guess there are many, many services in the United States that have this problem, or it's a solution, whatever your take is, it's actually a good thing. I was in college when I started in EMS, and I think that there's a lot of people in our industry that started in EMS when they were in college. I was originally in college to be a physician. So glad I didn't go that way. There's no physicians on tonight, so I can say that. And I really like being a paramedic, and I really enjoyed it. So I think that this foundation has become kind of a force since 1993 for a lot of the things that can go on campuses around the country. So I'm pretty pleased to have those guests. So we'll introduce them last. But first, my esteemed panel, as always, Mr. Tim Noonan. Hello, sir. How are you?
How are you? I'm doing well.
Good. I'm good. Not as good as Avatar, but I'm nearly there. I'm more the flat smiley face.
Okay.
You know, I'm here. It's this weird weather this time of year. I'm just give me sun, more sun, please. Less cold.
Oh, we've got nice snowflakes here. Good snowman and snowball weather.
Nice. Well, thanks for coming on, Tim. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Right on. Also joining us tonight is Harry Mueller. And Harry, did I let you introduce yourself the last time you were on the podcast? Because I don't remember.
You did.
Okay, good. They all blend together after a while, and then I lose it. But you're in charge of the new EMS Research podcast. You want to tell us how that's going, and what should we expect from you guys?
Well, it's going pretty well. We've recorded 3 episodes so far. The panel's been pretty excited. We've done 2 episodes where we brought in special guests, one from the American Heart Association Emergency Cardiac Care Committee, and another one, Dr. Keith Wesley, to talk about reading EMS research. We got a 4th episode that we're getting scheduled, and we'll get that hopefully recorded sometime in the next couple days. And we got some stuff in the works with some more guests and a lot more research. We really just, I think we're all in the same place where we think that EMS providers need to understand research. They need to be exposed to it so that they can have conversations with their management and their medical directors and really advance the profession.
Right on. And you know what I like about your podcast, because I'm not a researcher by trade, if you will. And it's interesting to me to see people that actually teach me how to read it and understand it, because I get the pre-hospital research one that I can't think of the name right now, but you know, the pre-hospital research magazine that comes out every few months. And God, I'm really bad that I don't know that, but I really appreciate the analytical side of that. But I just, sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, this is really boring. Somebody needs to explain it to me. And now we have a voice. You guys can explain it, which is a good thing.
True confessions. I'm not a research wank myself. I just got into research in the last 5 years or so when I started doing protocol development and realized that I just can't go to my medical director and say, hey, this is a good idea, because he's going to say, prove it. So there's a lot of people on my panel that are much better at understanding the analytical side of the research. I just like to think that I'm able to bring them together, and I'm able to hopefully propose some interesting topics. But I'll be honest, every episode, I learn probably as much as anybody else just listening to the panel. It's a great panel, and they're very most of them are very well educated on research, and I'm looking forward to learning more about it as I go along.
Smarter people than I. I appreciate that. You know, I was looking at your ranking on iTunes. I think you're in the top 200, which is awesome. That's really good. I know. So go to iTunes. You can subscribe to EMS Research, and we appreciate you guys coming along EMS Radio and being a part of us. You know what? Don't tell Jamie, but I've pulled ahead of him on iTunes, but just don't tell him. Okay. Shh. That's our secret. Have another drink of your beer. Thanks for coming on tonight, Harry. I appreciate it. I caught you in a mute moment. Sorry about that.
No, you caught me in mid drink. No, it's my pleasure. I'm just sitting here and watching the snow fall.
Ah, very nice.
I really want to find whoever in New England is praying for snow, find them, and politely ask them to stop.
Yeah, I understand. I know the feeling. Also joining us tonight is Mr. Scott Keir. Hello, sir.
Hi, Chris. Good to be back.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. You know, this is I was really excited when I got the email about this topic, because it's really near and dear to my heart, coming from a collegiate EMS service myself. And I am too in the witch hunt to find whoever is asking for all of this snow. I'm quite sick of it.
Can I ask a question?
You can.
I heard a rumor, and it's purely speculation, that perhaps you were at Springfield University,
yes,
or college. What was that?
Springfield College, home of the Flaming Moes.
And how did was your college song like do or something like that, where you just kind of did the Homer Simpson thing, or
just close enough?
Okay, just checking. Hey, thanks for coming on. You know, when I saw that this week, I just kind of smiled politely and went, I got it. That'll be fun for the podcast. So the Flaming Homer, or the Flaming Moes?
Yeah, the Flaming Moes.
Really? That was your mascot, huh?
I wish. That would have been terrific. Okay.
Well, I can't wait to hear your insight on this topic, and it'll be a lot of fun. So thanks for coming on tonight. And I hear Harry probably has some insight on this topic as well, but we'll get to that in a minute. So joining us first from, and I'll let Michael Hilton introduce himself. He's from the National Collegiate EMS Foundation. And if you would like to find out more information about them, it's ncemsf.org. And Michael, thanks for coming on. Tell us a little bit about who you are, your foundation, and just all around good stuff.
So I'm Michael Hilton. I'm currently a resident physician over at University of Pittsburgh in the emergency medicine program, but I'm also the national coordinator of the National Collegiate EMS Foundation. And it's an organization that's started, as you mentioned earlier, in 1993. Actually started on as like a listserv sort of organization and developed into this large national organization that does many things to help support collegiate EMS groups throughout the year. One of those things is our annual conference, the 18th of which is coming up at the end of February in Philly. It's a three-day educational conference that features over 800 or now over 900 collegiate EMSers from around the country and Canada as well. And we have a full schedule for this, including lectures and work groups and a skills competition. But we do more throughout the year. We feature a Collegiate EMS Week in November, where we have different events that Collegiate EMS squads put on, including a National CPR Day, where we have a mass training of collegiate EMSers of college students in CPR. And during the year, we also help startup collegiate organizations start up, help squads work out problems and help them work out solutions, help them to expand and help them to grow. And we're currently fostering, and interesting that we mentioned this earlier in one of the other introductions of your panelists, currently working on setting up a sort of research arm to NCEMSF. It's in its infancy stages, but we hope that will grow. So that's that. I started in collegiate EMS when I went to college, obviously, about 10 years ago now. Quickly became involved in NCEMSF as its New York regional coordinator and then went on to become its national coordinator. I was also a volunteer guy in EMS in high school as well, so I've had a sort of varied EMS experience, and currently through my residency program still quite involved in EMS besides NCEMSF. So it's a little bit about me and a little bit about NCEMSF.
Very cool. I had a couple questions before we start. One, do you know Daniel Patterson?
Yes.
Oh, okay. He's a great guy. And he's a researcher over there at University of Pittsburgh. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Right on. And if you're interested, Daniel Patterson is, I don't know if I'd call him the leading EMS researcher, but he's pretty doggone close. He's getting up there for sure. How many chapters of collegiate EMS do you have around the country, or do you know that?
So we have 12 regions that we split the NCMSF into. And in those 12 regions, there's varied amounts of collegiate EMS squads. But I can tell you that come to our conference each year, we have about 100 different squads that come to our conference each year, maybe close to 100, 110 or 20 now these days. But overall, we have a database of collegiate EMS organizations on our website that different squads register themselves. And there's somewhere around between 300 organizations in there, maybe a little bit over 300, somewhere between 300 and 350 organizations that have registered themselves. And there's more out there too. We're finding about new organizations every day. So there's actually even more than that. So there's a lot of squads out there, varying in sizes, varying in what they do. But there's a lot of them out there.
Very cool. Well, thanks for coming on, Mike. And we will ask some more questions of you very shortly.
Well, thank you, and thanks for inviting me. So, thanks a lot.
Hey, no problem. And also joining us from, I believe it's Tufts University, is John Ehrlich. Hello, sir.
Hi there.
Hey, and this was your brainchild, so you get tell us a little bit about who you are, where you're from, and what you're doing, and why you thought this would be a good topic for the garage.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me on. My name is Jonathan Ehrlich, as you said. I am a senior at Tufts University, and I am, now I'm a supervisor crew chief at Tufts EMS. I do a lot of consulting work with the organization in terms of policy and a little bit with emergency management as well in the Department of Public Safety, which is the overall umbrella administrative organization for our our squad. Our squad is a free, non-transporting BLS first response service. We run out of a Ford Explorer 24/7 during the school year, so we're out of service when school's not in session. And our medical direction comes from our campus health service, and we're entirely student-run, staffed by about a little more than 40 right now, student volunteers, all EMTs, managed all by students, all the officers, all students. And again, under the administrative umbrella of the same organization that administers the University Police Department, environmental health and safety, risk management, all that good stuff. And we handle about 350 calls per year. Very similar to what I am, you know, what I believe a lot of other collegiate EMS organizations are structured like. I'm also a volunteer. I'm originally from New York, and I'm a volunteer at two services back home, transporting services. And I'm actually not as, and this is one of the reasons why I thought this would be a good topic to discuss in terms of the goals of a lot of collegiate EMS organizations. I'm not a pre-med student. I'm studying international relations and economics. But one of the interesting things about collegiate EMS, as Dr. Hilton is testament to, is that it's a great starting point for a lot of people that are interested in further careers in emergency medicine or emergency management or healthcare, anything, I mean, a lot of different things. And why else did I think this would be good to discuss? Because, you know, all the reasons that have been mentioned, they're somewhere between, seems to be about 120, 50, maybe even 200 collegiate EMS agencies out there. They play a unique role in the landscape that is EMS around the country, and I thought it would be good to talk about and interesting to hear a lot of people's perspectives. I also think that collegiate EMS is a great place to, you know, learn about certain things that might be applicable to larger scales of EMS. I've actually been looking into how collegiate EMS can be an extension of the care that's provided by the University Health Services, and maybe taking that and applying that to how municipal EMS could be an extension of community health services. Things like that provide interesting topics of discussion. So I'm interested to see where the discussion goes. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I have to, I'm going to start out the conversation by asking the obvious question, because I cut my teeth on a local fire department that served an area that was very close to CU Boulder. And of course, CU Boulder might be known as a party school. So I guess the obvious question is, do all you guys handle AR emergencies involving drugs or alcohol? I mean, it seems like the obvious question, but perhaps I think that might be a stigma, and it would be something that you guys should talk about, I think, and tell me what kind of emergencies you guys deal with every day. Is it the same thing that normally EMS deals with, or is it all, you know, 19-year-olds that have been drinking too much because they're the first time away from home?
So, you know, while calls on the weekends might be related to alcohol, as might be expected, and I can say from working in the emergency department that, you know, we always see an upswing there of calls related to alcohol from our local colleges, and in collegiate EMS it's the same thing. But during the week, you see your standard sorts of calls you might see in regular EMS, but you also see a lot more other things such as athletic-type injuries, fractured, you know, wrists or twisted ankles and that sort of thing, severe chest pain, because college campuses, of course, don't just have college students on them. There are professors, there are people working in the dining services, there are people that are working in environmental services, there are all sorts of people on college campuses supporting the students, but at the same time that have, you know, problems that, you know, that require EMS assistance, like chest pain, shortness of breath, asthma exacerbations, dizziness, syncope, falls, head injuries, that sort of thing. So while on weekends you may see an upswing in alcohol-related calls as you would in any EMS system near a college campus, at all other times it's the sort of same things that any EMS agency would see. I don't know if John has any.
I can throw out a number for you. Numbers are always good. And here at Tufts, our call volume in terms of alcohol-related chief complaints are usually range between 20 and 30%, which for most people is a lot lower than expected. And everything that Mike just said is totally true. You know, you think of a college campus, on average, you're talking about 18 to 21-year-old healthy individuals, many of whom are athletic. Injury-prone, because you may say that college kids tend to find themselves in interesting situations. But overall, people who would seem to not require, you know, that much medical assistance. It's not, after all, anything like a nursing home. But just as Mike just said, we have a lot of traumatic injuries, specifically from athletic-related events, particularly football and rugby would definitely be the highest thing in terms of traumatic injuries that we get over the course of the year. But going back to alcohol, there's just so much to discuss, especially when it comes to a college campus, not only because you have so many alcohol-related patients, but all of these alcohol-related patients are students at a university who... what I'm trying to say is they're not individuals that don't have anybody who is basically tasked with the responsibility of looking after them. So the universities, as a consequence, at least in the case here at Tufts, seem to be very concerned liability-wise with making sure that pretty much everyone goes to the hospital. So it makes alcohol-related injuries, alcohol-related calls, a little bit different from your normal alcohol call. And I guess the one way that I would stress it's different is that, what I would say is deans and doctors. So... you have a lot of people who are taking a look at what's happening to drinking on alcohol campuses, notoriously high levels at many schools of binge drinking. So, you know, you are not going to necessarily just see your normal level of intoxication. Very often you'll have extremely high levels of intoxication and very altered mental status. And even in the least severe case, universities are very wanting to have all their students go to the hospital, which is not necessarily what all local EMS providers want to happen.
So, Harry or Scott, what are your experiences there?
Well, I think I'm going to... Go ahead, Scott.
Oh, no, sir. After you.
Okay. I'm going to come at this from a similar situation to the previous two panelists. I work for a service that is based on the campus of the University of New Hampshire. We're not owned or operated by the university, but with UNH having only recently fallen off the top 10 party school list, alcohol does play a significant part. It's a significant comorbid factor in illnesses and injuries on campus. There have been studies that have shown that on other campuses we're duplicating that, so we have information on our campus. It is a factor, but generally... we don't find that it is the primary thing that we're called out for. You know, as people said previously, the university has a wide variety of people, and we will end up with patients on the university campus from you know, from 2-, 3-, 4-year-olds at childcare centers all the way up to elderly community members that are either walking through campus for exercise or auditing courses. So we get quite a variety. Now, we add to that variety by also being the primary 911 provider for EMS for the community that the university is located in and two other communities. So our students that are members of our organization also get that additional experience where they're doing not just campus calls, but they're doing everything, which can be a tremendous benefit. But alcohol does play a part, but it's not as great as people would think.
Yeah, my experience is a little different from yours. Springfield College is a very small school of only about 2,000 students or so that live on campus year-round, and then another, I'd say 500 to maybe 1,000 tops that are commuters and come in from the area. I had the privilege of serving 4 years very early on in the organization's existence. I believe we were founded in 1994, and I was at school there from 97 to 2001. While I'm going to have to kind of echo what was initially said in that come weekends, we did see the larger ETOH population, but the other stuff is out there. We did a lot of event coverage. We dealt with a lot of the ortho injuries from covering sporting events. And I mean, all in all, it was just a great experience. And it was a great learning experience for, you know, anybody who had never been on an ambulance before or was thinking about EMS as a career. It was a really nice way to get your feet wet with the, not quite as critical patients the majority of the time, but there is a good mix. It's just, again, you know, I think Chris is kind of right in that you do see the larger percentage of ETOH patients from time to time, but you get the other stuff mixed in there too.
Well, and I guess my thought was, it was more stigma, and I really don't feel that that's probably appropriate, but I think maybe my hope tonight is that people can see that there's another way, A, to interact with another system that perhaps you hadn't thought of. Maybe you can start a collegiate EMS system, or you can join one when you get there, or you're a service director near a college, and how do you interact with that crew, or can you start a on-campus response system that can help alleviate some of your burden and volume? So anyway, that's kind of my thought process tonight, and maybe as we go through it. But first, joining us, Russell Stein. How are you, sir?
Better late than never.
Well, you know, and I got your name right.
So, yes, hey. You did.
And so in case you're following along at home, you can't take a drink because I didn't mess up Russell's last name. So, sorry. So, Russell, how you been?
Not bad. Happy Good. Happy my 4 couple days off is here. So.
Right on.
Well, it was very busy.
Just so you know, we are talking about collegiate EMS tonight. And we have John and Michael from the ncemsf.org on with us, and we're talking about collegiate EMS. So, John and Mike, can you guys give me an insight as to kind of what is the bare minimum? If you're the new year, you know, we're getting ready to, seniors are getting ready to graduate from high school, they're getting ready to go to college. What's kind of what should I expect my first couple weeks on campus? You know, I could go to the chess club, which, you know, I would love, but, you know, I didn't really get along with the football guys when I was in college. So where should I go to get involved with a local chapter of EMS on my campus, or what should be expected as the minimum expectation as a high school student coming in?
So collegiate EMS squads on all campuses sort of organize themselves a little bit differently and have different entrance requirements. Some will accept members with just your basic CPR and first aid certifications, and then we'll provide training later on up, you know, to EMT certification. Others only accept EMTs, but will facilitate on-campus courses. I can tell you, when I was at Columbia with Columbia EMS, They only accepted EMTs onto their service, but they sponsored an on-campus EMT course for those that weren't already EMTs. Many of our members came from, I know many of the members that enter collegiate EMS squads come into college with an EMT certification and are self-motivated to seek out the opportunity on campus. You know, they're volunteers at high school, at their local EMS squads, and they want to continue that experience while they're away at college. So a lot of them come and they sort of start, you know, before they even get to campus, looking for how to get involved. But for those that haven't had that experience and want to seek out that experience, usually at the on-campus activity fairs at the beginning of the school year, have collegiate EMS organizations have booths that have like information on how to join, what requirements there are, and how to meet those requirements. Other times to get involved are during the National Collegiate EMS Week, which occurs in November, when many of the collegiate EMS squads out there have on-campus demonstrations and activities. And then finally, just looking at the college websites, we'll always have a link to somewhere on that, usually under the activities stub somewhere on the website, or student life stub somewhere on the website, to the collegiate EMS group on campus. So if you're interested, those are a couple of ways to get involved. And again, the requirements to get involved in terms of certification and training vary depending on the organization.
It's sort of strange, isn't it, thinking of an ambulance service, of an EMS agency, a squad, as a student club, isn't it?
That is true. A lot of the collegiate EMS squads are not actual student groups as are, let's say, like your chess club or your football club. They're actual EMS agencies. Like, for example, Columbia was in, it's a state chartered like EMS squad that's part of Columbia, yet it's not under the same umbrella group as your general activities clubs. It fell under health services and the Department of Public Safety. And most collegiate EMS squads are actually under something like that. They're either a part of health services or they're a part of public safety, or are actually like a third service that sort of works in conjunction with but is completely separate from those other two groups. Very few are actually organized as a pure student club. So it's unique on campus.
And that's how we are at Tufts, just that organized under the Department of Public Safety. Our office is in the police station, and we're dispatched by the university police. And we get our medical direction from health service. But we still bill ourselves as the only student group with lights and sirens, which is, but if I just can add on to what was just said, it's one of the really neat things about collegiate EMS is the number of educational opportunities that they provide to potential EMTs and to students in general and the surrounding community. So we offer an EMT basic class here, and I know that most of the colleges and universities or the larger ones in the Metro Boston area do. The biggest training center is Boston EMS, is Boston University EMS, and they teach a class at Brandeis and at Harvard, and they taught the Tufts class for a number of years. But there are educational opportunities that are offered by collegiate squads all over the country. I'm not sure if you read, I think it was featured in GEMS a few months ago. Emory has a has a program that they teach to their incoming freshmen. I think they got it up to about 800 students this year, where they put them all in the track and field house and taught them an hour-long CPR class. So they're looking at some point to teach, I believe, every single incoming freshman CPR. That's their ultimate goal. So unique educational opportunities like that is something that exists on a college campus that you might not find anywhere else.
Russell or Tim, do you guys have anything to add or ask at this point?
Well, I used to respond with Villanova EMS as a paramedic response. And they had a problem where the county did not allow them on the 911 dispatch radio to have their own radios and communicate with everybody. They had to call up to public safety and have them call over and dispatch a medic or another ambulance. Have you guys had any problems with that? And the reason given by the county was they said, you know, this is a bunch of kids. They're not responsible. My experience was exactly the opposite. They were, if anything, more responsible than the local ambulance companies. I did not find them to be in any way irresponsible, and many of them also volunteered for the local ambulance companies. So do you find that to be a problem?
I think across the country, it sort of depends on each squad's unique situation. But overall, you know, things are that can be in other places. It's not. Some places, if you look at Binghamton in New York, Harper's Ferry is very integrated with the local EMS squads via radio, and it's very unified within the county's EMS system. I can give you an example of Columbia, which is sort of has its own internal radio system, and that public safety dispatches it, has its own internal radio, just it's a public safety radio system, but it also carried a backup radio in case they needed to get in touch with FDNY EMS. There are many other ways to set up a group. Some are completely unified, some are completely separate, and some are sort of a hybrid like at Columbia. It all depends on the local politics and the local organization, the local culture, and how well the organizations sort of get along on a organizational and almost political level, as anything is in EMS. How do they do it over at Tufts, John?
Well, as I mentioned, we're dispatched by the local police department, and it's sort of an issue with the local police department. In the state of Massachusetts, if you dial 911 from a cell phone and nobody on a university college in the university campus is about to dial 911 on a landline, I mean, maybe if you're in a classroom, but, you know, even if you have a classroom with one landline and 200 students, you're probably going to get the call on the cell phone. You go to a state dispatcher who forwards that to the local PSAP, and in Massachusetts, those calls are never forwarded to university police. It's always to the local police. So in that case, you're going through three steps in order to get to local police. You're going from the state to the local municipality to the university. And once you get to the municipality police, then you'll go to the, you know, local fire or EMS, usually fire in Massachusetts. But that's why there's such an effort by universities in the Massachusetts region, at least, to have students call a 10-digit local 911 emergency number directly. So in that case, the emergency call goes directly to the university police station. They dispatch us. We have absolutely no radio communication with the local ambulance providers, which is, you know, problematic to a good extent. When we operate large events, we provide them with with radios that operate on our frequency, so it can be a little bit logistically easier. But just as Mike said, a lot of it has to do with politics and how you're viewed by your local fire agencies and EMS agencies. There are, you know, there are definitely times when a local ambulance provider is going to show up and not be so happy that somebody called, and it might have been your call, but it might have not been. But so we're probably on the partially integrated level in this spectrum of no integration at all and completely integrated.
You know what I find interesting is what you said something earlier, and it was about, you know, I don't know where we fit. We don't, do we fit in the public safety department of the college, or do we fit into the health services part of the college? And I think that's very interesting, and I want to go there in a minute. But first, we need to talk about a couple sponsors. I'd like to thank audible.com for providing sponsorship on this episode of EMS Garage. So if you're a listener of the EMS Garage, you can go to Audible and get a free audiobook. You get a 14-day free trial, and pretty much you can check out everything on their site before you decide. You're like, okay, what can I get? Well, you can get pretty much anything, and I'll give you my pick of the week here in a minute. But I will personally recommend one here in a minute. But go to audibletrial.com/EMS Garage to get your free 14-day trial and a free audiobook. You know what? If you cancel after the 14 days and you're like, I don't want this, the audiobook's yours. You can keep it. You can put it on your MP3 player, your iPod, your Zune, whatever you decide to play it on. Oh, your Droid X like me. And I'm quickly finding that's my player of choice, unfortunately, after my old iPod Touch sits on the shelf. So I want to recommend this week a rather geeky book because, as you know, I'm a geek. The Hidden Reality, Parallel Universes and Deep Laws of the Cosmos by Brian Greene. You can find that. It's a little geeky, I know, but I will tell you that there is so much information in that book that I think it will open your eyes to go, wow, I didn't really think that you could think that way. And string theory, and even if you don't understand physics and you're not interested at all, it's okay, because you will like this book. It's narrated well. It's about 15 hours. So if you have a few hours on your commute after you listen to the EMS Garage every week, and all the other podcasts on EMS Radio, you can listen to this one. And it's really, really good. So audibletrial.com/EMS Garage is the URL where you can get your kind of, it's insider. Don't tell many people because we want to keep that on the down low, but you can go there and get your free audiobook. So thank you. Also wanted to tell everybody, and I'm not sure if Russell's going to be there. I know Harry's going to be there. I think Scott's going to be there. I know a few other people are going to be there. We're going to be in Baltimore, EMS Today, and we're going to have our podcast studio. And I think I found out today where it's going to be. It's in a really good place. So I'm pretty excited about where we're at on the show floor. Last I heard, there's probably around about 40 hours of podcasting in 3 days. I don't know how we do it, but we're going to do it. And I know I'll be tired and my voice will be crazy. And by Saturday, I'll be like, here's our pick of the week. And I'll really sound like I should be on radio, but join us at EMS Today. We'd really like to thank Gems and Go Forward Media for bringing us out to EMS Today this year, sponsoring our podcast studio and all of the fun events. I know there's going to be a tweet up and a meetup. I don't know if they're the same thing, but I've heard they might be. And so if you're following us on Twitter, you can find us there. You can follow EMS Garage or me, Geeky Medic, and we'll tell you where it's all at. And I don't think you even need to pre-register. We'll give you free drinks as you walk in the door. So it could be a lot of fun. And I know last year's meetup was a ton of fun. They held it at Uno's. And I hope we have an equally fun place to go to this year. Otherwise, I'm sure there will be informal things all week. Otherwise, just come by the booth and say hi. I like to meet people. And maybe we'll go out and grab a latte. Or in the evening, grab a beer or wine or whatever your choice is. So if you're coming, come on by the booth and say hi. So Mike and John, I wanted to talk real quick about this idea that you guys, it's a struggle for you to kind of figure out where you fit into not only into the university system, but in the EMS system as well. And I find that struggle interesting because I think that as an industry, EMS in general, we don't really know where we fit. Some of us are in fire. Some of us are in public safety. Some of us are in hospitals. Some of us are private, for-profit. Some of us are not-for-profit, third service, government entities. We just don't know where we fit. So how have you found, I know you haven't had a lot of time, 4 years, you know, I've been doing this 20 and I still don't know where we fit. So 4 years, how do you see the industry changing, and do you think it's for the better?
Well, I have to comment one thing there. I think it's been a theme of what I've been saying, but every EMS, collegiate EMS squad is different. And I think, again, that's true in all of EMS in terms of where it's located, some health services, some public safety, some third service. And like you said, it's a bigger question of what is EMS's role. And it's not just in terms of what is it organized under. Is it under public safety, under in a hospital's supervision? But it's what is EMS? And that's a much larger question. You know, is it a public safety service? Is it a healthcare service? It sort of straddles the line between the two, which always makes its position and organizational structure sort of very nebulous and enigmatic. The role of EMS in the future, and that's another large question. That's a great question, though. Is it, you know, I think the trend has been over time, it's become more associated with its health service role. You know, obviously starting out within a more public safety role within fire departments and such, or as volunteer third services. But over time, it's become more healthcare based, and at least it's overall the spirit behind it. You know, you were mentioning earlier about research, and, you know, healthcare research is finally hitting EMS in many ways, but it's still something that's just developing. But all that will make, I think, EMS more of a health service while still retaining some of its public safety characteristics. But I don't know. Those are just a couple of my thoughts there.
I mean, as I was saying, well, first of all, I agree with what Mike was saying. I mean, you have, just briefly, there's a very well-known, fully equipped squad would be something like Virginia Tech's squad, which is basically the local area ALS provider. Texas A&M squad is staffed at the Texas MICU level. I mean, these are all extremely advanced squads that can basically be put into the category of municipal EMS provider. And, you know, they sort of know where they fit in terms of in terms of not being so nebulous and being more structured and in terms of where they go in the healthcare providing chain of survival. I know that's a CPR term, but you know what I mean. And then, I mean, there are other EMS providers on campus. Like if you take a look at Emory's EMS squad, they're staffed at the intermediate level, so they have a few ALS interventions that they can provide, and they end up riding the rigs into the transport destination. And then there's someone like us who, then there's someone like Columbia where they are a regular BLS provider, but where is somewhat unclear. And then there's us who, we're not even a transport service. At one time, services like us were transport services in that, you know, on a college campus, you have a lot of people away from home for maybe even the first time. and some of them will call a college EMS squad because they don't know who else to call. You know, they've called their parents. Their parents hung up on them. They have no other resource. And, you know, it's, you know, they have a cold, or they have stomach pain. They have food poisoning. And we get a lot of those types of calls. And if it didn't go through us first, it would really be a big burden on the municipal EMS system if they had to show up to every single one of those calls. So at one point, we transported the non-serious patients to our health service. And then I know that a squad like Brandeis across, you know, who's just down the road from Tufts, did that as well. Not so much any longer. And that's sort of an example of what I think the future of EMS is in terms of where we fit in, which could be as I was saying right in the beginning of the podcast, some sort of extension of the provision of healthcare that's offered by the University Health Service. And you know, at some point, that's a microcosm for what might exist in the future of EMS out in the larger world.
Well, and I think that's kind of the way we're heading as an industry. And when I look at things like community paramedic, and I look at just where we're, where the future of us is going, that you guys are kind of on that cutting edge. I mean, I don't know. I guess I look at it as a college football team. Every 4 years, you have a new team, and so that kind of idea that even once a year, you're kind of doing this churn, and you're getting new ideas, and you're getting people in there that are, you know, new out of the box thinkers a little bit. And I think that that does nothing, that excites me a little bit, because I think it helps grow what we're doing. But I'll let the rest of the panel talk. I feel like I've been monopolizing. What do you guys think?
I think it's a great way to try out a different kind of EMS system with a relatively reasonably healthy base as your clientele and the people that you're serving. Just going by the generalized assumption that, you know, when you go away to college, you're young and you're relatively healthy, really kind of gives that flexibility to, you know, not have to deal with the MIs every day and not have to deal with the chest pains every day and be able to look at different situations and try and triage those situations differently. It's interesting to hear what John says. I was quite in the same boat to where we would try and triage down as much stuff as we could to kind of keep it internal and within our campus health center versus taking these kids and parking them in an ER for, you know, 6 or 8 hours at a time for a wait time when there's really no need for it. So, I mean, you know, in that aspect, to be in a situation like that, where you can actually be supported and encouraged to, you know, contribute in that way to EMS, I think is a terrific thing.
How do you get the experience in determining who is well and who is not? Because one of the big scare diseases of collegiate EMS is meningitis.
And again, that comes down to education and support.
Yeah, I mean, if I just add one quick thing, meningitis, a lot of viral diseases in terms of just regular, you know, cold things, because when you think about it, dormitories are up there in terms of extremely areas of high transmissivity in terms of disease. I guess this was last year with H1N1 that, you know, really sets a college campus apart in terms of how you have to deal with close quartered living and something of that nature.
Yeah, I want to copy.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Harry, go ahead, and then Mike.
I'm going to say that I'll be perfectly honest. I think collegiate EMS is in the same place as EMS everywhere else in the country, trying to figure out whether we're a healthcare organization and an extension of the healthcare system, or we're a public safety organization. Just because we fulfill roles from both sides, and there is no way to strictly define us in one category or the other. Clearly, if you're going to, you know, a motor vehicle accident on campus, you have to have a certain subset of skills that are out of that public safety skill set, where you also need to have something out of the healthcare skill set. The one place that I think many collegiate EMS services are moving ahead of the rest of the country is coming up with guidelines on alternative destinations. Again, operating on a university campus, I don't have to transport everybody to the emergency department. I can call and consult with health services and say, this is what I got. Can we bring them to you? And granted, depending on the time of day, if they're closing in 45 minutes, they are likely to say no. But all things being equal, if it sounds like something they can handle, they will say, yes, absolutely, bring them here. Don't go to the hospital. And that is something that I don't have when I respond to calls in the community. I don't get, absolutely, bring them to the urgent care center. Don't come to the ER. So I think there's pluses and minuses, but I think Collegiate EMS is in the same conundrum, public safety versus healthcare, that the rest of us are in.
In terms of alternative transport, I know Columbia had protocols that would define which patients could be transported to health services, and those were tried to triage via protocol, and those were developed with the medical director at the time, and is actually currently still the medical director, Dr. O'Brien, to try to a priori just with protocol determine who could be transported to health services, but even so, you'd still have a phone call to health services, and they'd have to accept the patient. And it's an interesting model of EMS. But I just want to mention that, or refer back to something Chris said. Collegiate EMS squads turn over every 4 years. And it's not just that the squads themselves change every 4 years. You get to try new ideas every 4 years. But the squads themselves, people that were Collegiate EMS leaders or even just members go on to be many things, whether it's in healthcare, as physicians, EMTs, paramedics, whether it's in business, law, public policy, government, emergency management. People go to many different things. But one thing that people go to is EMS leadership, and you have these people developing these new ideas in these like little laboratories throughout the country that are Collegiate EMS squads, and they can bring these new ideas into their new jobs as EMS leaders in the future, which is an interesting concept. And these people can play around for 4 years with these Collegiate EMS squads in a very unique environment and come up with these great ideas and just bring them to the EMS world at large once they get out of college. And it's a pretty cool thing. So,
Russell or Scott, do you guys have anything to add? Go ahead, Tim.
Agencies they're working with. I know that with Villanova, we were trying to teach them less panicked care when we were there, and then the local fire department got rid of us, and there are rumors about why, but I wasn't there, so I don't know what the rumors were. The agency that replaced us is known for pretty much flying everyone. So, unfortunately, sometimes you get the wrong kind of education provided, the wrong kind of example set for the EMS squad at the university. What can be done to provide them with better education of what actual good patient care is, as opposed to just having opposed to whoever happens to be there, what's done to help them get a better understanding of what's considered nationally a good standard of care.
You mean in terms of educating the providers of Collegiate EMS squads?
Yes. If they're going to go on to be leaders in medicine, EMS communities, we want to have them actually knowing what is good patient care rather than just following along with the typical mythology that a lot of agencies ascribe to. Trendelenburg physician, fly everyone who's got a dent in their car. Oxygen more is better, that kind of dangerous patient care.
Yeah, I think Collegiate EMS squads go about this a couple of ways. One, we're dealing with a population of college students. We're dealing with a population that is quite interested in learning and bettering themselves. Not to say that other EMS providers elsewhere aren't, but it's a very enthusiastic population, a population very thirsty for knowledge, very interesting population, again, for EMS, young and energetic. So a lot of these squads by themselves just are try try to expand their knowledge base, whether it's by doing, you know, practicing with drills, bringing guest speakers, working on educational curriculums with their medical directors, or even further, you know, like as our organization, the National Collegiate EMS Foundation, has this conference each year that brings in national speakers, national experts on many different topics with tracks on trauma, leadership, you name it. We'll have a lecture that can talk to any topic that can introduce these providers to care that's practiced maybe differently than they practice it, care that's sort of at the top of its game, the best quality care. You can learn all about this at our annual conference. But during the year, again, squads bring in guest speakers, work on education with their medical directors, have QI, case reviews and things like that to really increase their care that they provide. Of course, any EMS squad is going to have, you know, local customs and local practices, and there's nothing that can really ultimately be done about a lot of local customs. You see it not just in EMS, you see it in medicine too, and the way medicine is practiced in different emergency departments across the country, even in different parts of the state, is different. So you're always going to have local practices, local customs. But by going to like national educational seminars, you can start to break down some of those local customs and local barriers or think about things differently. And so a combination of local education and going to things like our national conference, can, between the two of those things, can really help improve the care provided by these EMS providers and allow them to see EMS at large a little bit better.
And let's not lose sight of the fact that even though we are talking about student-run organizations, they really aren't going about it alone. And that's a great point about guest speakers and whatnot. I mean, when I was there, we strive to do a lot of chart review and just about 100% CQI on what we were seeing come in as far as charts go. And we also always reached out to the transport services in our area so they could better understand that what we did and we could better understand what we could do to make their jobs easier when they came on campus. And that kind of relationship, I think, is very, very important to have. And that branches off to education. That branches off to learning how to provide better patient care and makes a huge difference. I mean, now I sit on the other side of you know, where I was. I work for a service that services the city where I went to college. And as a result, I have to see these kids who 10 years ago, I was in the same boat that they were. And I keep that in mind, and I encourage the people who work for me to keep that in mind. And you have to try and maintain that positive relationship so that everybody kind of walks away taking something from it.
So
Can I just add on?
Go ahead, John. Go ahead, John, and then I'm going to ask a quick question. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to add on to that real quick because it's such a good opportunity right now in terms of what is it Scott, I think, just said. And that is that when at least our collegiate EMS squad has a run, there is a doctor looking at that run sheet the next day. And following up with that patient the next day, and that's something that's to be considered in terms of quality assurance, quality improvement, training, and patient care, because that's not something that you really see in terms of outpatient care. That's not something that you see in other systems, and it's pretty unique. In terms of training, yeah, we do the same thing that's been mentioned in terms of having paramedics from Boston EMS come in and talk, because if I'm the supervisor and I've been an EMT for 3 years, I'm sure that according to most of you, that wouldn't be all that much experience to be training people with.
So my question, let's say I'm a local ambulance agency and I want to at least encourage or find out what's going on in the college campus that I serve, or start an agency or start a local chapter. How do I do that? I mean, if I'm, you know, like I said, I've got 22 years into this and, I want to know what's in the local system, because I see it as a couple things. One, it's a recruiting tool. I can find people that maybe want to work for my service later, or I can really utilize them and bring them along to really further the patient care that we're delivering, A. And B, you know, maybe we can offer them some resources. Maybe I have some old equipment that I want to give them that's really still usable, but maybe is not quite up to our agency standards, something like that. How do I get involved, and how do I find that out? And then I'm going to ask you, how do students that are coming in get involved? So let's start with the first one. I'm their agency director. How do I find out more information about the college campus near me? You know, what should I do to reach out to them?
So the best way to get in touch with these groups is typically trying to get in touch with someone from usually public safety or the college health service. And either of those points can lead you to the Collegiate EMS squad on campus. And I think it would be great if you're a local squad that does want to work with one of the local Collegiate EMS squads in terms of shared training, maybe doing drills together, inviting the local Collegiate EMS squads to any of your own CME lectures, or even donating equipment, because a lot of these college squads could definitely, you know, benefit from some of the equipment that, as you said, may be a bit used, but is still usable and is still safe. Then for your other question in terms of founding Collegiate EMS squads, most of the Collegiate EMS squads are founded and organized and run by the undergraduates on the campus itself. So that's that. I'll stick with that question for now rather than going on to the students.
And then Jonathan, John, how would a student get involved?
So students, as Mike mentioned, a lot of students get involved in that they come in with some prior EMS experience. We have 40 students that volunteer right now. I'd say around five of them came in, between 5 and 10 came in with previous EMS experience, in that they worked for a local volley or they were an EMT. I know you, I listened to your podcast on high school EMS, and one of my good friends was a supervisor in Darien, Connecticut at the all high school run post 53. So we actually have a few kids from there. And the main feeder for Collegiate EMS agencies would be the basic class that the squad offers. So that's where we get most of our volunteers, is from our class, and we do advertising for that class. We offer scholarships for that class because it does require an additional lab fee. And that's the main feeder. In terms of founding an organization, the National Collegiate EMS Foundation has always had an online discussion forum, I guess equivalent to what might be EMS1.com. Either, you know, all those forums online. Imagine just having about, I don't know how many people are signed up for the collegiate one, but a lot fewer people talking, and a lot of those discussions have to do with people who are interested in creating their own squad. And you hear the stories from people in terms of the obstacles that they face. It's easy to create an idea for your squad, but it is extremely hard for a lot of people to be able to create a squad on their college campus. There are pressures from the administration in terms of liability. There are pressures from the Department of Public Safety or the police department or whatever the whatever the public safety office is on campus, in terms of not wanting to house administratively or physically that some type of organization. And there is huge, there's oftentimes negative positioning from local fire departments. I'm going to take a minute here to do something I didn't want to do, which is demonize the local fire departments and EMS agencies, because, you know, what we've been talking about here is great in terms of joint training, sharing resources, understanding everybody else's position in the system and roles, and the local fire department and ambulance service, at least here and for most of the squads here in the metro Boston area, have absolutely no interest in conducting joint training or sharing resources. I mean, we've been involved in some MCI training, but that's really the extent of it. And yeah, I mean, to some extent, it's unfortunate in that they're not really interested. To some extent, it's understandable. The municipal ambulance providers are all contracted private services, and some students work for those services in local areas. But in terms of shared resources, yeah, they're really, a lot of them aren't interested, which is disheartening to some extent.
And that's a, again, regional local issue. Every area is different. Some areas have more conflict with the local squads in terms of things, less cooperation. But there are still a lot of areas that work well with their local, you know, fire, EMS, municipal services, or other third service that's in the area. So it's very local. But in terms of starting up an organization, not just do we have the NCMSF forum, there's also a startup coordinator. His name is Andrew Manor. And he works with interested students across the country in working with them to start up programs. And we've guided many programs to start up with a formula that works pretty well. But it's a lot of work. It's, you know, as you mentioned, there's the whole liability question, which is really largely not really there. There's not much liability in collegiate EMS if you look at case law. But in terms of that, in terms of funding, in terms of finding space on campus, but the biggest issue that colleges see when a group starts up is because it's a four-year turnover, it's hard to put money to an organization that's going to require space, a lot of equipment, perhaps a vehicle, to this interested freshman or sophomore or junior who's going to be gone in 3 to 4 years. So the question is, will this group be standing 8 years from now or 10 years from now? And it's hard to predict that when groups are starting up. And the hardest thing is to convince the administration at these colleges and these different departments on these different colleges that when you're starting up this organization, this is going to be an organization that's going to last, that is worth investing in right here, right now, all these things that the organization needs. So I think that's one of the biggest barriers to starting up one of these collegiate EMS organizations.
It seems as if you need a minivan. Everybody always seems to start out in some sort of minivan that says first aid squad or something on the side.
Right on. Very cool. Well, you know, I would encourage you, if you're a part of an EMS agency or a part of a local college that doesn't have EMS and you're interested, or you're just a person that wants to know more, you can go to ncemsf.org, or you can join me. And I just did this. I went to their Facebook page and joined, and it was pretty cool. I also became friends with Mike Hilton. I can't find Jonathan Ehrlich anyway, but I'm sure he's on Facebook, so we'll find out here in a minute where he's at. Any last ideas or thoughts from the panel tonight about college EMS or how we can really embrace our local colleges, or how we can help them out, or how we can use them as a recruiting tool too?
My only piece would be don't be afraid if you are in an organization to reach out to your local provider. And as a local provider, don't be afraid to reach out to the student organizations, because you're exactly right. It is such a terrific recruiting tool. My college, the main core of our program was our department was members of our EMS management program that was at the college. But we were actually able to recruit students in who were either undecided or not sure what they wanted to do or not happy with their existing major. And we were actually able to get a lot of experience for a lot of other health-related students, you know, or students with other health-related majors who wanted to get a little bit more patient contact time and get a little bit more hands-on. So it's a great recruiting tool for programs. It's a great recruiting tool for services, and it's really something that needs to be embraced.
Right on. And any other thoughts?
I'd just also like to add briefly that the, you know, Queen's EMS squads are also, you know, community service organizations, the communities, their college campuses. They provide the students, you know, leadership opportunities and management opportunities. And it's, for those people, you know, that are listening to this, that are going to go to college soon, or, you know, are going to be freshmen next year, in the next couple of years, if you're interested in getting part of a collegiate EMS organization, it's definitely worth it from a lot of those aspects, not just from the actual EMS part of it, but from all the other things that the collegiate EMS experience will provide you. So, and thanks again for inviting me on this call.
Hey, no problem. Tim, did you have a comment?
Yeah, the colleges really should take advantage of this. They're trying to encourage more responsibility in students, and very few things will do this as much as a collegiate EMS organization. People learn from their peers, and when they see their peers out taking care of them, when their friends get drunk, when they get drunk, when they fall down, when they get into a car accident, whatever is going on, it changes how they look at what they're doing. And we need to, you know, just grow up in EMS altogether. There shouldn't be these interagency rivalries. There is absolutely nothing appropriate about that. And that was part of the reason why a lot of people died on September 11th, because, you know, police and fire just don't talk to each other because we're too immature to do that. And we shouldn't be behaving in a way that's supposed to be. There's nothing wrong with collegiate EMS. I've had overwhelmingly positive experiences with them when I'm the paramedic responder and their PLS, and they've all done a great job when I've worked.
So basically what I'm going to say at this point, and we're like an hour and 20 in, so we probably should stop. But what I want to say is, if you want to grow up and you want to be really involved, and I would think, and I know I started in EMS very young, so it helped me mature probably very quickly. And if you think that you're ready for the challenge and you want to know more, go to ncemsf.org. And I'm going to let John go first, then Mike, and you guys can plug whatever you want to plug and tell us where we can find things. And then we'll roll out to the rest of the guests and let them plug their stuff. So, John, where can people find you, A, and where can people find out more information about Tufts University and your EMS program specifically?
Sure. Well, thanks again, Chris, for having me on. I really appreciate it. I thought this was great. You can find me at facebook.com/Ehrlich. Ehrlich. I thought we had a great discussion. You can find Tufts at tufts.edu, T-U-F-T-S, and you can find Tufts EMS at publicsafety.tufts.edu/TEMS. Don't call us for tactical EMS. That's not us. We get a few of those calls every year. We're looking forward to the National Collegiate EMS Foundation Conference in a little more than a month. We always like to have new members. So thanks again.
And a couple quick questions. John, are you guys, I know you're in Massachusetts, so going to come to Baltimore to EMS today or no?
I don't think any of us are coming to EMS today. I have a lot of friends that'll be there. You know, it's funny. There's just so much interest in collegiate in EMS from the college age population. I volunteer at a squad out in Long Island, and there are just so many of them that basically almost go dead when college is in session, because so many of the volunteers are away at school. It's just neat to see such interest in people that are my age. So interesting for the future of EMS.
I completely agree, and I'm happy to see that. So I want to come to your conference. So you got to invite me because I want to come because that'll be fun. So Mike, where can people find you, and where can people? Are you an MD yet, or you're a resident, and so you are an MD? Is that correct?
Or DO? That's correct. MD.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm an MD, resident at the University of Pittsburgh, in the emergency medicine residency program here. But in terms of finding me, obviously you can find me on the leadership page of the website that's been mentioned numerous times, ncemsf.org. You can find out more about startup from our startup coordinator, Andrew Menner, who's on that site as well under the leadership tab. Our 18th annual conference is coming up February 25th to 27th, and the link to that from that same website. And if you're interested in coming, please do. It's a great conference. You can see last year's program is posted up there, and this year is going to be, if not very similar in quality, it's going to be better. So you can look at last year's program to get an idea of what it's like. And finally, become a friend of us on Facebook, as you just did, Chris, and I also became a friend of yours on Facebook while you were talking on this call here. So anyway, those are places you can learn about NCEMSF and Collegiate EMS. There's multiple resources on our website, so just take a browse through the website.
Very cool. And I just went through, and if you want to go to a conference this year that's really cheap, $90. $90 for a non-member. So even if you walk up to the door, it looks like it's only $100. So gosh, that's pretty cheap to go to a conference this year. And it looks like a lot of fun. So boy, it's in Pittsburgh. So Tim, you've got to go. You got to go and tell us all
in
about
Philly.
It.
In Philly.
Oh, it's in Philly. Sorry. It's not. Oh, so even closer for Tim. Right, Tim? You can go down there. It's pretty easy. February 25th through the 27th. I'm barely hearing you, Tim. I'm not sure if it's just me or you.
It could be me.
Okay. So where can people find you, Mr. Noonan?
RogueMedic.com, ParaMedicine101.com, the EMS Research Podcast, wherever else I happen to show up, EMS Garage and such.
Right on. And I know I just saw that you wrote an article about a show that we recently did. So thank you very much. I appreciate that. I love the cross-link love. So, Mike and John, you guys are more than free to take this podcast once it's up and share the links or download it and share it with your friends. I don't care. Share it with everybody because the more the merrier. And we really appreciate it. So thanks for coming on the garage. Scott Keir, where can people find you other than stalking a Simpson?
Haha, nice. Sorry. You can find me on Twitter at MedicSBK and on my blog, which is EMS in the New Decade, 2010EMS.blogspot.com, which I am very proud to say was nominated and is a finalist for a Best New Medical-Related Blog of the Year competition. The voting starts tomorrow, and the link will be up on my blog. So if you want to vote for me, come on over and check it out.
Quick question. Who's doing the contest?
It's medgadget.com.
Huh. Oh, all right. Medgadget.com. All right. We'll give them a little link love there.
Yes.
And are you going to be at EMS today?
Oh, you better believe I'm going to be at EMS today.
You better be on my show. Don't be on Jamie's show.
RJ and I are planning some stuff for the Wednesday night, and there will be more to come on that in the near future.
Very cool. Hey, RJ, who's RJ?
That would be me.
That would be Russell.
Isn't that RS?
Well, my middle name's Joseph. So
I've never heard you call RJ. How sad is that? I've known you as Russ, Russell, and that guy named Hybrid. So where can people find you, sir?
HybridMedic.com, Facebook, HybridMedic blog. That's pretty much it right now. Everything else is kind of falling by the wayside for the moment.
I completely understand. So you're coming to EMS today as well?
I am.
And you're going to be on my show? You're going to be on my show?
If I'm invited, yeah.
Thursday, you and Scott are both invited. Not doing a show Friday, doing two shows Saturday. So it's kind of a crazy day, but we have some, I can't really talk about it right now, but we've got some big things coming up for Jamie and I on Friday. So we have to kind of bow out of the podcasting, but hey, maybe you and Scott could take over our show, and maybe Harry and a couple others, and just take over the garage for a couple hours at the on the show floor and do your own thing. Do some kind of crazy show. It'd be fun.
That'd be fantastic.
We could
be pretend to be Chris and Jamie.
Now that would be funny. I'm sorry. That would be funny. I would pay money to see that. Well, you know what? I will. I'll link you up with our executive producer and let her start talking to you. So she's awesome.
Groovy.
Harry Mueller, where can people find you?
Well, researchems.com for the EMS Research Podcast. That's what I seem to be spending a lot of my free time on. I'm on Twitter at the Mac Medic. Email themacmedic@gmail.com and popping into the EMS garage whenever I can.
Love it. And here's a little piece of wisdom. Don't worry about it. It will be fine. People will come. It will be fine. Just take your time. Don't worry about it. He knows what I'm talking about. So you're coming to EMS today as well.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be there for the entire time, but I can be there for 3 or 4 days.
You'll be on my show as well, and my hope is we'll do an EMS Research Podcast while we're there. Maybe two.
Yeah. I've been talking with the panel, and we're going to try and get enough people there to do at least one live show. I'd like to get two or three in if we can, with some special guests off the floor, but we'll see what we can come up with.
And you know my show, and boy, poor Jamie and our executive producer, Ann. They really hate me because I'm the kind of guy, I never know who's showing up to my show week to week anyway. And so I kind of run the show floor the same way, that I just kind of invite everybody and hope that I get three guests. It always inevitably turns out I get like five or six, but which is unfortunate because I only have three more mics besides the one for me. So it kind of drives them crazy. But for me, it works. And apparently people like it and they keep coming back. So I'm not at all offended. So you know what? If you're listening to The Garage and you want to come on the show, come on by. I'll bring you on. And especially the last day. The last day is kind of my time to go wild and crazy. And it's kind of after almost 5 or 6 days of us being there. So we're tired, exhausted, and pretty much ready for anybody else to talk at that point. So I know when I come home, I'm pretty much exhausted the next 3 days. So thanks for joining us. Thanks for coming on the EMS Garage. Mike and John, I hope to have you back. I would love to have you back, especially in light of your annual conference coming up. Maybe talk about that. Talk about, even if you can come on for a couple minutes next week or toward the conference time, toward the end of February, and talk about it. And then give us an update after the conference. Tell us how you thought it went. And I really want to come to the 2012 conference. I think that would be a lot of fun. And maybe we could even do a couple live shows there, get the college students involved with podcasting, because I'd love to get them on. My voice is not the only one in this industry, and we really need more of that type of show. We have Gen Med, which is a Generation Med podcast that talks about EMS and generational issues. So I think that would be a fun show to have there too. So anyway, I'm rambling at the end of the show here. Sorry about that. I'm Chris Montero, Geeky Medic. Join us next week when we talk more about issues that concern you in EMS. Have a great day / night / weekend / whatever you want.